Ross, the attack on the pension funds in Detroit is said by the state constitution says you can't do this. It's protected by the state constitution, and
it's perfectly clear.
Right, and first of all, most of the pension fund is 97% funded. There's only a small percentage that's unfunded liabilities there.
Well, it's more like 80 some percent, but it's better than many. It's not a catastrophe.
So do you think the bankruptcy court can get around this? What's going on with that?
That's an excellent question. You know, I don't think it's been resolved whether the bankruptcy court feels that it can ignore the Michigan Constitution. What's clear is that the emergency manager is extremely hostile to the workers and their interest. He's extremely hostile to the notion that they have guaranteed pensions. You know, people who have worked 30, 35 years, who were promised these pensions and gave up salary and other benefits to get them, the thought that he can, as cavalierly as he is, just throw them into the pot and say he's going to reduce them. The average pension is like $19,000. So people are not getting rich. They're barely able, a lot of people, to survive on the pension that they have. It's unconscionable that he would ignore the Michigan Constitution and do this. And I hope that there's a remedy even after bankruptcy, even if the bankruptcy judge were to go along with this, which I hope that he won't. I would hope that there is a remedy under the Michigan Constitution for what is a violation of the Constitution on the part of the governor and the emergency manager who are state officials, for them to ignore the Constitution and try to reduce these pensions it's illegal, it's unconscionable, and there ought to be, and I hope there is, a remedy.
Richard, one of the things that, certainly I don't see that Detroit's bankruptcy poses a systematic or systemic risk in any way to Wall Street and global financial markets, but it certainly seems to pose a systemic risk to Main Street, really, to local governments and to the contractual rights of pensioners.
Well, I think that's right, and I think that the one issue that we need to be clear about is that whatever the city manager, the emergency manager, Kevin Orr's personal motivations may be, this is very much a part of a larger picture. These emergency manager laws themselves have been encouraged by groups like ALEC, corporate, the American Legislative Exchange, I forget the acronym now, but the corporate funded group for state legislators. It's been something they've been pushing in other states, including California, where if a city runs into fiscal difficulty, the state can overrule the elected government of that city and appoint a city manager. And in many cases, it's been a Republican governor appointing city managers for emergency managers for Democratic cities. And there is a pattern throughout the country of blaming pensions, singling out from a city's entire range of financial obligations worker pensions as being outrageous and getting the public worked up as if these were enormous killings that these workers were making, when, as Ross points out, it's the average is $19,000, and by the way, some of them don't have Social Security. So I think that, there's a very large and systematic pattern here, and we've seen at the same time assaults on Social Security benefits, which should be increased, but we've seen calls to cut them in various wages, with the president going along and deficit commissions and so on. So I think this notion that a decent retirement is somehow American reality is really pretty central to a certain political agenda, and I tend to see what's going on in Detroit as reflecting that. First of all, to overrule the local government, then to attempt to declare bankruptcy legally, and then to void the pensions and to single out the pensions without looking at some of the other causes and forces behind Detroit's difficulties. And, because Detroit is an extreme case in terms of the nature of its financial difficulty, the 40,000 abandoned buildings, the rapid depopulation, because it is so shocking, it's almost the perfect shock doctrine case to pick to set a precedent for cutting pensions as they've wanted to do in Vallejo, California, or other cities around the country. So I think it's one we need to watch very carefully for precisely that reason.
Well, Detroit's bankruptcy certainly also threatens to change the rules of the municipal bond game, and already it's making it more expensive for the state's other struggling towns and school districts to borrow money and fund big infrastructure projects. We'll continue to look at this critical thing because it has tremendous implications for other cities and our own as well. We've been speaking with Ross Eisenbray, Vice President of the Economic Policy Institute, and Richard Eskow, Senior Fellow at the Campaign for America's Future. And I hope you'll come back and join us as we continue this discussion over the weeks and months.
Thanks, Mimi. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.